Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to Grupo Lala's third quarter results conference call. An audio webcast of this call and access to the accompanying presentation are available within the investor section of Lala's website at lala.com.mx. All participants are currently in a listen-only mode, and as a reminder, today's call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to your host for today, Mr. David Gonzalez, Grupo Lala's Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you for joining our call to discuss our financial results for the third quarter of 2018. With us today from Grupo Lala are Mauricio Leiva, Chief Executive Officer, and Alberto Arellano, Chief Financial Officer. Yesterday, we issued our earnings press release after market close. The release is also available within the investor section of Grupo Lala's website. Before turning the call over to management, listeners are reminded that certain comments made on today's call may be forward-looking statements that are subject to risks and uncertainties. Management may use forward-looking statements as they discuss the company's strategy and business in the future. Actual operating or financial results could differ materially from those anticipated in these forward-looking statements. We ask that you consider all forward-looking statements in conjunction with the cautionary statements in our earnings release and the risk factors included within our filings within Mexican Bolsa. With that, I'll now turn the call over to Mauricio Leiva. Mauricio, please go ahead.
So thanks, David, and good morning, everyone. I'm pleased to join you on my first earnings conference call with Grupo Lala. I'll begin our call by giving some color on my professional background and then share some initial observations since joining the company in early September. I'm very enthusiastic to lead Lala and the team for our next chapter of growth, leveraging my 25 years of experience in business integration and managing global consumer companies. While my background is more in consumer products, brand building, marketing, and operations, my real passion is fostering leadership and talent, which I believe are key to Lala's success. It has been important for me to meet as many people throughout the organization as possible. So in my first 45 working days, I've spent it on the road visiting our operations and taking time with every part of the business. My approach has been to listen, learn from the teams, learn about Lala, and learn from our customers and consumers across the regions. Having said that, I am an action-oriented person, and time is of the essence here. So we're already started as well to make some important decisions and changes for the business going forward to reverse the drags, trigger growth, and recover margins. So may I ask you to please turn to slide 4 of the presentation, where I'll be taking a deeper dive into each of our markets. But first, I'd like to share some specifics on initial areas of focus that will feature as part of our near to medium term strategy. One of our top priorities is to have a comprehensive people program to attract, nurture, and retain the best talent, with a short and long-term compensation plan that is fully aligned with the company's interests and will allow our colleagues to grow professionally and as individuals in order to drive future growth and position our company for continued success. Turning to operations, as part of my first 45 days of takeaways, we'd like to concentrate our strengths to generate the most significant impact on our results. So our primary focus will be on Lala's key markets. This means that we're clear that winning in Mexico is the name of the game, both market and margin-wise. And we will continue expanding profitably in Brazil, where we see the most meaningful near-term opportunities and have the assets to win. I am a firm believer in the benefit of driving a virtuous cycle, where the business must find operational efficiencies and cost optimization in order to invest in market-facing activities and expand margins. Along these lines, starting in 2019, we will be introducing zero-based budgeting to Lala, which will establish a more disciplined and detailed cost analysis per business of line, creating a culture where we act like owners to maximize the return of every peso invested and avoiding superfluous expenses. In those same lines, we will be strengthening our procurement division and capabilities, centralizing purchases to drive scale, extract better pricing and negotiation terms to maximize effectiveness in negotiations and cash flow. Furthermore, we are redefining our capital allocation strategy, specifically regarding near-term M&As. This means we will only target opportunities that are highly strategic and complementary to our existing portfolio, preparing us for future success and buckets of growth. We must focus first on leveraging our previous investments, exploiting the operational and intellectual synergies that we've acquired recently, as well as making every single region of Lala a profitable one. I can tell you that in my short time in this job, I've already had to turn down a couple of deals which were not within these parameters. Finally, I'd like to say that starting this quarter, we're increasing the level of disclosure of our financial information. We will be reporting all regions separately, volumes by segment, and market shares within each region twice a year. We believe this information will help you better understand our operations, make our leadership team more accountable of our strategies within each region, and increase transparency with the market. If I may ask you to please move to slide 5, I would like to share my optimism about what I've observed so far, particularly related to certain areas I've identified where we can make rapid changes to improve performance. To begin, we have a strong business in Mexico with significant opportunities to leverage our market leadership position, drive innovation, and broaden our value-added product offerings. As my first priority, I will be reassessing Mexico's operating structure with a focus on growth by defining category business units with strong revenue management teams and cost management discipline functions supporting them in a matrix manner. We will be able to work in a more strategic, structured, and consistent way to deliver profitable growth and expand margins. We have a unique distribution competitive advantage that we must exploit further and space to elevate our execution standards. We will enhance our innovation pipeline by facilitating the transfer of best practices, especially from our business now in Brazil. And moreover, one of my goals is to foster an inspiring corporate culture in Lala, where ownership, meritocracy, accountability, transparency, and a focus on results are at the root of our day-to-day work. If I may ask you to please turn to slide 6, where we'll talk about Brazil. I see Brazil as a market with tremendous opportunity, and today we have the fastest growing dairy brand in the country. When I visited our operations, I was impressed by our agile and innovative team and by the many intellectual synergies that we can export to the regions. Talent, processes, and an innovation pipeline that is 10 times greater than Mexico. That's what we have in Mexico, and with higher quality standards. Therefore, we believe that Lala is well-positioned in Brazil with Vigor, an engaging and powerful brand, competing in value-added dairy and with a strong geographical footprint that will allow us to capture additional share as the market begins to turn around in this country, when the sleeping giants awakens with a strengthened economy and revitalized consumer environment. We can turn to slide 7, please. I've identified significant opportunities to reverse the drags we're seeing at our U.S. and Central America operations, where we have already implemented near-term actions to rectify the fact that these regions were currently not fit for purpose. We will ensure that both are positively contributing to EBITDA starting next quarter. To achieve this, we are right-sizing both operations to be leaner and more agile by implementing what I call the double-hatting principle, where we increase the reporting span, as well as taking every employee closer to the market and operations. Further, starting this quarter, you'll note that we are disclosing Central America's results separately from Mexico. And later, we will provide more details about the actions and provisions we have taken to achieve recurrent near-term savings. On slide 8, as quarterly highlights, we will go through each region. So firstly, let's highlight Mexico is growing with a tight margin. Second, Brazil confirming growth potential. Third, right-sizing of U.S. for a profitable growth. And fourth, Central America and Caribbean refocus on key categories and geographies. So let's move to slide nine, Mexico. Starting with Mexico, sales grew 4.6%, driven by volume expansion in all of our segments, especially in yogurt, cheese, cream, and cold cuts, that helped us improve our sales mix. We have continued with our premiumization strategy by launching the first premium flavored milk in Mexico under the Lala 100 brand, Lala Suprema, and expanding the portfolio of Lala Delicious. We have continued advancing in our market share leadership according to Nielsen, where we gained market share in milk, packaged cheese, and cream, and lost 30 basis points in yogurt as we struggled to fulfill our service level and fill rate in July and August. It is important to notice that our growth is coming from investments where we have done that we have done in the last 2 years. As an example, we have the innovations launched this quarter and the growth coming from cheese, yogurt, and cold cuts. In September, we started increasing prices and have continued doing so during October, partially compensating inflation. Therefore, the effect in margins is going to be reflected until next quarter, Q4. In slide 10, Brazil is confirming its growth potential demonstrated by sales expansion of 10.3% in local currency. Nonetheless, the devaluation of the real made the sales in pesos decline 8.1%. As a consequence of our increase in sales, according to Nielsen, we also expanded our market shares in the subcategories of yogurt and cheese where we participate. This has allowed Vigor to become the market leader in Greek yogurt, spreadable cheese, or requeijão, and cream cheese. We have successfully gained leadership in the subcategories where we currently play, and we are confident we have further growth opportunities in the other subcategories of yogurt and cheese where we're still not leading. To enhance Vigor's potential, we are investing in our biggest branding campaign to reinforce our positioning of quality and value-added products and to consolidate the strongholds we currently operate. This quarter, we still had some unexpected pressure in our margins from the consequences of the transport or trucker strike back in May. The strike changed the seasonality of milk demand, increasing 25% the cost of raw milk. To compensate, we have put in a gradual price increase strategy that began August and will end in October. Despite this impact, our EBITDA margin grew 105 basis points in comparison to the same quarter of the previous year. On slide 11, talking about the U.S., we grew 3.6% in sales in dollars and 10.3% in pesos, driven by drinkable yogurt, where we're category leaders and gained 80 basis points. Where we're category leaders and gained 80 basis points of market share, and Promised Land, where we also gained 70 basis points of share. To make this business profitable, in addition to the structural decisions we have made throughout the year, we're recognizing it to be fit for purpose, expecting savings of $6 million for full year 2019. To do so, we're focusing the team on organic growth ambitions, implementing double hatting principles to have a leaner and more agile structure and corporate mindset. Moreover, we have promoted the CMO of the U.S. as new CEO, leveraging on her former startup experience to have a growth-focused management team. Continuing the structural choices we have made in the previous quarters of closing a plant and moving the production lines to Colorado, we have now gone further and signed a co-packing SLA to take the capability utilization of the site from 40% up to 80% by year-end. We expect contracts to be signed during the fourth quarter. Additionally, we're starting to produce Promised Land in the East Coast with a co-manufacturing agreement recently signed. With these two actions, we're expecting additional savings of $2 million per year starting in Q1 2019. So let's move to slide 12 and talk about Central America. Sales in Central America decreased 7.9% due to the political challenges we still face in Nicaragua that significantly impacted top and bottom line results. Nevertheless, in Guatemala, we have reached record sales driven by ice cream, yogurt, cream, and milk formula. To return to the path of profitability, we are closing the Panama corporate office, and as shared in Q2, we've already reduced 20% our headcount in Nicaragua. As of the end of the year, Central America region will be managed from Guatemala, allowing us to apply the double hatting principle as well, for the same management team will be leading the region and Guatemala and being closer to one of our key markets in the region. Additionally, to refocus on our key geographies, we have appointed a distributor in El Salvador instead of maintaining direct route to market. We expect all reorganization actions taken in Central America to produce savings on the order of $2 million per year. As you may recall, in 2017, Lala announced the construction of two multi-category facilities in Guatemala and Costa Rica. In Guatemala, the plant is going to start production full capacity in the fourth quarter, increasing ice cream for the country and some exports. The new plant in Costa Rica is also open for full disclosure and commitment of product the second quarter of 2019, and therefore going into Central America's largest dairy market. I'm confident that all these actions will allow us to refocus in our key categories and geographies to continue expanding our leadership across the region, but more importantly, to bring positive EBITDA numbers for CAM as of next quarter. I look forward to getting to know you over the coming weeks and months, and to continue providing more insights and color up to the business results and our plan for the future. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Alberto, who will discuss our financial results for the quarter. So, Alberto, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mauricio. Good morning, everyone. Please move to slide 14. As you know, this is the first time that we're disclosing volume by segment. Therefore, let me explain how we quantify volume in Lala. We use a measure called kiloliters, which is calculated by adding kilograms and liters equally. Fluid milk and beverage are measured in liters, while cold cups and other dairy products like yogurt, cheese, and cream are measured in kilograms. As shown on the slide, during the first quarter of this year, Lala reported total volume increasing 13.5%, driven by growth in all categories and the acquisition of Vigor in Brazil. Milk represents 73% of our portfolio, whose growth is driven by Lala and Nutrileche brands in Mexico, plus the additional UHT milk sales coming from Brazil. Other dairy volume grew 59%, mainly behind the acquisition of Vigor, which has a high concentration of yogurt and cheese, plus the organic growth from the other regions. Beverages and others increased 10% in volume, driven by the cold cuts category in Mexico and the inorganic contribution of beverage from Brazil. Please move to slide 15. On a reported basis, total sales grew 24.9% due to organic growth and the consolidation of Brazil. Using comparable figures, Lala sales increased 4.3% to reach 15.7 billion pesos. This growth is a combination of volume increase and an improved mix. Please, let's move to slide 16 to look at the net sales by geography. Mexico increased 4.6% to 14.2 billion pesos, driven by volume and mix due to our premiumization strategy. We have also gradually taken prices up during September and October to partially compensate for cost inflation. However, the benefit in margins will start to be realized until the next quarter. Brazil reported net sales of 3.1 billion pesos. In reais, Brazil grew 10.3% because of a strong performance in all categories, where we continue expanding market share. Innovation continues to be strong, contributing to more than 25% of the sales growth. We have also started to transfer inflation to consumers by gradually increasing prices from August to October. The U.S. reported net sales of 826 million pesos, a 10.3% increase, driven by double-digit growth in drinkable yogurt. As Mauricio mentioned before, starting this quarter, we are sharing Central America results separately. While this region represents only 3% of our total sales, top line decreased by 7.9%, impacted by Nicaragua's political situation. We expect that the new plants to be open in Guatemala and Costa Rica over the next months will decrease dependency from Nicaragua by supplying certain products. Please move to slide 17. Reported EBITDA in the third quarter closed at 1.7 billion pesos, a decrease of 6.6% versus the same period of last year. The contraction of reported EBITDA is explained by the reduction of comparable EBITDA and the integration of Brazil at lower margins. Our margins in Brazil's operations were pressured by the unseasonal increase in raw milk of 25%, a consequence of the trucker strike that Mauricio talked about before. Comparable EBITDA decreased 17.2%, a contraction in EBITDA margin of 310 basis points. We will get into more details in the next slide. In slide 18, we see a decrease of 250 basis points of comparable EBITDA margin, which is mainly explained by the following three reasons. First, higher than expected inflation in energy costs, more specifically, electricity, 37% increase, and diesel, 20% increase versus last year, as well as packaging cost pressure in Mexico. Second, the political situation in Nicaragua, which reduced our sales in this country by 20%. And third, the one-off restructuring expense of 119 million pesos for the U.S. and CAM, reserved during this quarter, aimed at right-sizing and streamlining the organization for profitable growth. We expect this one-time expense to deliver $8 million of savings starting in 2019. Let's move to slide 19, please, where we are going to be showing reported EBITDA by region. In Mexico, EBITDA was 1.7 billion pesos, a decrease of 200 basis points in margin compared to the third quarter of last year. The margin decline is explained by the strategy taken during the first half of the year to softly manage prices, which did not compensate for a strong cost impact stemming from higher than expected inflation expenses in packaging and energy. In mid-September, we increased our prices in most of our categories to partially minimize the effect of cost inflation towards the end of the year. In Brazil, we closed the quarter with an EBITDA of 197 million pesos, a margin of 6.4%. On a year-on-year basis, this represented a 105 basis point of margin expansion. Brazil has also implemented price increase to compensate for the additional pressure coming from milk price. For consolidation purposes, we must consider the 16.8% devaluation of the real year over year. The U.S. continues this quarter with an EBITDA loss of 158 million pesos, affected by the one-off expense to resize the business. If we exclude this impact, the U.S. would have had a negative EBITDA of minus 54 million pesos and a margin of minus 6.5%. The reconfiguration of the business is an immediate efficiency that adds to the structural improvements done throughout the year to improve margin, such as the closing of the Florestan plant in Texas, the reconfiguration of Promised Land portfolio, where through downsizing we increased prices by 15%, and the progressive improvement in capacity utilization in Colorado, where we plan to move to 80% utilization by year end. These combined measures will allow us in the U.S. to become profitable starting next quarter of 2018, so Q4 of 18. In Central America, our EBITDA margin decreased 480 basis points versus last year, affected by the one-off expenses to right-size the business, as well as the negative political situation in Nicaragua. Without the one-time expenses, the EBITDA of Central America would have been a loss of 14 million pesos. The actions that we're taking are expected to return CAM to profitable growth starting next quarter. Excluding these one-offs, the consolidated EBITDA margin was 9.9% for the quarter. Please turn to slide 20. Reported gross profit was 6.4 billion pesos, or 34% of sales. The reduction of 400 basis points of reported gross margin was due to the integration of the Brazilian business at lower margins and to the gross margin contraction of the comparable figures of 270 basis points, mainly coming from the pressure on inflation in Mexico. Reporting operating income was 1.2 billion pesos, a decrease of 18.9%, while comparable operating income declined 28.8% versus the second quarter of last year. 28.8%, sorry, versus the third quarter of last year. Let's move to slide 21. Financing expenses for the quarter were 673 million pesos, related to the interest payments from the debt used to acquire Vigor. Taxes for the period were 266 million pesos, resulting in an effective tax rate of 55%. In this quarter, taxes were impacted by a 139 million pesos penalty of the tax authorities in Mexico, the SAT. This was the result of a special audit addressing different criteria used in LALA to calculate 2011 and 2012 royalty transfer pricing payments between subsidiaries. Importantly, this will not affect subsequent years. In a normalized situation, the effective tax rate of the quarter would have been around 35%. Reported net income was 216 million pesos, a 78.5% decline versus last year, significantly impacted by one-offs, higher financial expenses, and the tax penalty. Please move to slide 22. By the end of the quarter, total debt was 27.4 billion pesos, comprised of 1.5 billion pesos in short-term debt and 26 billion pesos in long-term debt. The company's net debt was 25.3 billion pesos, with a net debt to EBITDA ratio of 3.1 times, which remains unchanged versus the previous quarter. As you will recall, by the end of last quarter, we had completely refinanced our debt in Mexico and Brazil, resulting in an average maturity of 4.7 years. This refinancing was a combination of local bonds, cebures, two bilateral agreements with banks, and the syndicated loan. Before going into Q&A, I will now turn the call over to Mauricio for his closing remarks. Mauricio, please go ahead.
Okay, so thank you, Alberto. Can you please move to slide 23? So it has been a quarter with mixed results, where we have maintained a strong leading position in most of the markets where we compete, however, without being capable of capitalizing sales growth to the bottom line. So to change this pattern and create a positive momentum, we will first refocus on our key markets to generate the most significant impact to results, making it clear that winning in Mexico, market and margin-wise, is our priority, and by continuing to profitably expand in Brazil, as these two regions represent the most meaningful near-term opportunity for Grupo Lala. Second, we will drive a virtuous cycle of investing in growth and optimizing costs to expand margins and take immediate actions to reverse the drags, ensuring all of our regions are profitable. Third, we will further develop our capabilities in revenue management and enhance our innovation pipeline by cross-pollinating in our regions, improving, therefore, profitability and growth. Fourth, we will focus on optimizing costs by introducing zero-based budgeting and improving our procurement capabilities. And fifth, the last part of the virtuous cycle, we will transform our efforts into tangible bottom-line results and cash generation to be able to invest in talent, invest in growth, and gradually deleverage the company. So thank you for your time. And with that, I would like to turn the call over to the operator and open the line for Q&A session. Operator, please go ahead.
Thank you. At this time, we'll be conducting a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star key. Our first question comes from the line of Antonio Gonzalez with Credit Suisse. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my question, Mauricio, Alberto, and David, and Mauricio, my best wishes in this new chapter. I have two questions, if I may. First, You had a couple of comments on your prepared remarks on zero-based budgeting and leveraging or introducing an owner mindset across Lala. Obviously, on your previous professional experience, you have firsthand the prime example globally of these concepts. And I wanted to ask, as it relates to Lala, is there any specific that you can share with respect to two areas specifically? A, share compensation packages, and B, long-term retention plans for key executives. Are you considering these two items specifically when you think about introducing this owner mindset in the company? And can you just give us your assessment on what you think where Lala is standing at the moment on these two items? And then I have a second question on capital allocation, but I'll wait first for this one.
Hi, Antonio. Thank you very much for the question and your best wishes. First of all, talking about ZBB and ownership mindset, this is something that we've been driving since I arrived here to Lala, and we've been doing quite a comprehensive job on identifying those cost lines and opportunities and assigning champions and working together, even the way that we look at P&L, so that we make sure that throughout the month, the operation is looking after all of the different cost and expense lines to make sure that it's aligned with what we've built into the plan. So having a budget, but also the latest estimates, so that we are permanently looking at the operation and not necessarily waiting for end of quarter or end of a certain period results, but rather taking action as we speak throughout the month. And we have more empowerment of the teams so that they are able to find the savings and champion days and everything related to ZBB and this ownership mindset. Regarding the share compensation packages and long-term action retention plan, yes, we are developing two schemes where one is the short-term incentive and the second one is the longer-term incentive. And our plan is to have in the shorter-term or STI incentive compensation shares, restricted share units that would be allocated to senior management team. And in the long term, it will be more defined by share options, where management team will also have the chance in the longer term, being from 4 to 8 year span, in order to create value and make sure that our personal interest as executives of this business are aligned to those of shareholders and creation of value. So yes, we're developing both STIs based on shares and LTIs or long-term incentives based on share options.
That's very clear. Is there a particular board meeting or a time frame where this could be approved, or is it too early to tell?
This is something that we're starting to work as part of many of the initiatives that you saw and I shared with you today that will be starting as of next year. So the idea is that we're able to present this to the board before year end so that we hit the floor running as of 1st of Jan 2019.
All right. This is very clear. And if I may, just very quickly, you also made some comments on capital allocation, and thanks for the comments, by the way. We appreciate that near term, you're only focusing on super strategic opportunities for M&A, or else you'd rather leverage the existing assets. But can you just give us, I guess, your preliminary assessment? When you think about the long term, Grupo Lala previously had this vision, right, of becoming the preferred company in the Americas, and I guess the way the investment community thought of Lala is, you know, M&A will be a recurring theme when we look at it longer term. Is there any thoughts you can share on whether you see merit in this strategy very long term once you phase out this restructuring stage, or any, you know, early indication on what's your views on this theme, Mauricio?
Yes, Antonio, thank you. So first of all, I'd like to ratify that I'm focusing on these, what I call reversing the drags and making the actual regions and operations profitable. So that's where we're taking quick actions to turn these around. And on the other side, we're creating and working on the 2025 vision that will drive the most immediate choices. So with that, capital allocation and strategic M&A will be part of this, which we've been working and developing. What I can say is that capital allocation for me is a key success factor at aiming at recovering ROIC for shareholders. So how we work on this strategically, how they complement our portfolio, and where we focus will be part of the 2025 vision and plan that I'll be able to share with you in a couple of probably months, yeah, end of this year, probably beginning of next year, that will give a bit more color of what we're referring to.
Thank you so much for the comments, and again, good luck, Mauricio.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Isabella Simonato with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please proceed with your question.
And thank you very much. Good morning, Mauricio, Alberto. Thanks for the question. I have two questions. Mauricio, when you mentioned the opportunities you see in Mexico, right, and you list several levers that the company has in the region, how do you see the business going forward? I mean, in terms of growth or in terms of what would be normalized profitability? This has been, I mean, the premiumization strategy has been seen in the past couple of years, but at the end of the day, we saw margins contraction and pricing strategy not necessarily passing through the sort of cost pressures we're seeing. So how do you see the business growing from now on, and with what level of margins? And the second question, also regarding capital allocation, as Antonio said, is there anything in the portfolio today that you think it doesn't make sense, or potential divestitures to at the end of the day focus on the key regions you think are important for the company? Thank you.
So hi, Isabella, and thank you very much for the questions. The first one regarding the levers in Mexico. I think we're very clear that winning in Mexico, as I said, is the name of the game, and within that is increasing margins. In that sense, I think that the way to increase margins starts with the top line, what I call a virtuous cycle. So the first one is to focus on added value products that normally have higher margins than basic dairy or milk. The second one is to have premium type of products, so premiumization, which also normally, if well managed, come with higher margins, that together with a proper and sound revenue management plus zero-based budgeting should be able to feed this virtuous cycle in order to continue investing in growth. And with that order, that's why we're putting so much attention on cost control and areas like procurement for better negotiation practices as well. And for me, I repeat this, it's critical. It's revenue management. So the way that we take pricing decisions is much more accurate and aligned to what the business needs in order to win commercially, but also to be able to protect our margins. And ZBB or zero-based budgeting, as I explained, which will be the one that continues speeding this and making it sustainable. Regarding the second question, if Beto can
answer me. Well, yeah, Isabella. In reality, in terms of capital allocation, again, our key focus now is to make sure that what we have acquired can generate sufficient cash to pay back on the acquisition. So we are really refocusing, I would say, our strategy in the U.S. to make sure that we not only break even, but that we really can generate some additional cash. The same thing in the acquisitions we've done in Central America, and certainly very happy on the progress we are seeing in Brazil. As Mauricio was saying, our current focus is going to be in the key markets. So any potential further acquisition would also need to come from the filter that Mauricio just highlighted in terms of a very strict, I would say, process. In terms of divesting of our assets, this is not something that we're currently having in our table. This is again, certainly we think that the value of what we have acquired can be still extracted. So this is not on the table at this point in time. We are reassessing our 2025 vision and strategy, and this will certainly profile some additional choices. But at this point in time, this is not on the table.
That's perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Benjamin Thurow with Barclays. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, good morning, Mauricio, Alberto, David. Thank you very much for taking my question. Following up on that, just with the capital allocation, what Antonio and Isabella have been asking. So if I remember right, 3 months ago during a conference call, and I know, Mauricio, you haven't been there yet, but you gave kind of a guidance that you were looking to deleverage your balance sheet to come to a level below 2.5 times. So we're again above the 3 times. So just out of curiosity, what are the initiatives you're taking into consideration, and by when do you expect to get the balance sheet into a more proper situation, around about below the 2.5 times? Because we've obviously seen a lot of derailing in terms of the delivery on the break even in the U.S. Now we got a little bit of a setback in Central America. So all the things that kind of came up more recently and have been partially driven by the massive acquisition spree we've had over the last couple of years. So what's your target in terms of deleveraging, and where do you want to be by year end? And then I have a follow-up question on the U.S.
Yes. Hi, Benjamin. Listen, we have certainly had a couple of setbacks in terms of margin and EBITDA generation, and this has helped a little bit our plans or pause our plans in terms of repaying the debt. Our strategy is certainly to be lower than the 2.5. This is something that as we plan for next year, we believe it's going to be met likely at the end of next year. So now to your question, what are the things that we're doing to work on that spirit? First, the expansion of margins, as Mauricio was saying. Secondly, if you look at the details of the results, we're also improving our working capital position versus last year and versus the previous quarters. There are a couple of very specific plans in place to make sure that we can reduce our inventories, increase our payables and reduce our receivables as well in the 4 regions. So that's also, we believe, an important cornerstone as to be more efficient. And also, if you look at the CapEx investment of this year, we're going to be in the neighborhood of 3 billion pesos, which is 10 to 15% lower than the average of the previous years. So this is also aimed at generating some additional cash to be able to get where we believe the leverage should be. So that's on the leverage in Benjamin. I understand you had another question.
Yeah, on the U.S., and that's more of a, like, going forward strategic. I mean, looking a little bit at the industry in the U.S., and it seems like that dairy consumption per capita, like milk, but not only milk products, but also like derivatives, yogurts, drinkable yogurts, Greek yogurt, all the things you've been trying to focus on, there seems to be somewhat a trend of, well, at least not growing anymore, if not even slightly contracting in some of those categories, even in the further developed product categories, if you want to call it that way. So what's your take, and what do you think with something like that in mind, and to a certain degree a somewhat saturated, grown-out market, where do you think everything working well, where can you expect, where do you want to see profitability to be in the U.S.? Is it low single-digit EBITDA margins? Is it mid-single-digit EBITDA margins? What's, once you've done all the restructuring and taken all the hits, what's like your mid- to long-term target, considering that there are certain demand dynamics which are not precisely favorable?
Yeah, thank you, Benjamin. In this sense, the U.S. Is a mixed bag, but a very interesting one due to the size of the market. Reality for us is that drinkable yogurt and flavored milk is growing in the U.S. And specifically in the markets where we are operating and lead, or we have a core, for example, Texas and part of the southern coastal area of the U.S., we're definitely leading, and it is growing within the Hispanic population, but as well as the rest of the mainstream market within those zones or areas. So we are growing in a space where we believe is profitable if we manage the right sourcing and logistics costs and operations, which is the big changes that we've been doing in the U.S. during this year. So with the additional restructuring and focus that we're having in the U.S. operation, it'll take us to positive territory in 2019. So it's important to say that with the actions that we've started a couple of quarters ago and that we're finalizing now, the U.S. is coming to break even. And with the restructuring that I'm announcing today and that we've already started, it will take us to positive space. However, it is still too early to give any guidance regarding where we will end next year. As soon as we have better landed budget figures, et cetera, we'll be able to share with you. But right now, it's too early for me to give guidance.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you very much. And then just for clarification, for the rest of the year, we can expect 35% as a tax rate. It's an easy one.
Yeah, sure, Benjamin. This is Alberto. Was your question related to the tax penalty?
No, tax rate just for the rest of the year and looking into next year. So if we work with 35%, that's a good assumption, right? Because we've seen a lot of volatility throughout the first couple of quarters. But just to get a little bit of a sense of there were a lot of issues, 3Q, 2Q, whatsoever, but like going forward, if we somehow assume a 35, we're fine, correct?
Yeah, a 35 would be much more like a normalized type of tax rate. Now, when we are going to be the leverage below the 2.5 times EBITDA, given the inflationary component in Mexico, where you basically not deduct inflation, I think if you need to use something for your models for this year and next year, 36.5 would probably.
Okay.
Yes, more than 36.5 to 37 is what I would use.
Okay, perfect. Very clear. Thank you very much. Now I'll leave it here. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Alvaro Garcia with BTG Pactual. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning, Mauricio, Alberto, David. All the best, Mauricio, in your new role. My first question is for Mauricio in the U.S. So if you could sort of give us more details on the double heading in the U.S. and sort of the management changes we've seen. I just wanted to clarify, these are the same changes we saw in the past, or if there were sort of additional changes with perhaps more responsibility taken on in Mexico. So more clarity there, and then I'll have a follow-up.
Yes, Alvaro, hi. So this is Mauricio. Thank you for your question. Regarding the U.S., these are different changes to what you've seen in the past. First of all, what I refer to double hatting is how we have a more fit-for-purpose structure in the sense that we have a higher reporting span. Secondly, we operate closer to the market. And thirdly, there is physically double hatting. So the CEO will be doing as well the CMO role. So we have a much more direct influence and likelihood of growth strategy becoming key for the whole business. We will also be taking a bigger part of the operation, what we call back office, to Mexico, where we have the global center support, the back office shared service center that we have in Torreón. We're bringing some functions of HR, of finance, and IT. So that's also part of what's coming to Mexico. Thirdly, we're even changing physically, looking for the changing office space, because When I talk about fit for purpose, is the organization in the U.S. was ready and more focused on M&A kind of expansion and inorganic growth, rather than focusing on organic growth, which I believe is our priority. So even the offices were too big. We were utilizing half of the space that normally we'd rent it out. So even that will change, and therefore savings will come out of those lines. So it's a much stronger and direct way of finding efficiencies and savings that will go all the way to the bottom line, but most importantly, operationally make it more viable for 2019 and going forward, rather than just a one-time type of saving.
Great. And the charges seen this quarter in that operation are mainly provisions related to this, to these charges, to these actions?
Yes, Alvaro. This is exactly what we mean by the provisions in restructuring, both for the U.S., which is going to cover what Mauricio just highlighted,
mm-hmm.
and also in Central America, where we, as we wrote as well and shared, we are basically closing the offices in Panama, which was a corporate office in Panama, and we are relocating the team back to the Guatemalan market. And this is where the double happening as well in Central America is taking place. But both changes and restructuring have been provisioned and in Q3.
Great. And then just one second question, if I may. And Mauricio, I understand you're new to the role, so maybe Alberto can help out on this one. On competitive dynamics in Mexico, clearly, your let's say organic margins in Mexico have taken a bit of a toll recently. And I was just wondering if you could comment, maybe there's a particular category which is suffering or a particular area in your milk business. I was just wondering if you can give us a bit more color as to the competitive dynamics you're seeing in Mexico today. Thank you.
True, Alvaro. Listen, as we have shared, we were very cautious during the first semester of the year. First of all, given the pre-election environment in Mexico, and we were very cautious on making sure that consumption would not stop if we were very aggressive on prices. The other thing is that also we were not expecting the energy hike and the electricity prices going to the level that we're seeing today. So I can say that basically we did not prepare for this inflationary environment on that front. From the competitive standpoint, yes, we've seen also and we saw some pre-electoral, I would say, pressure and competitiveness. And we chose not to let go on market share. This is something that it was decided that way. As Mauricio shared, we're pretty much we have defended or even gaining market share in most of our categories. But yes, some of our competitors even went to downsizing, in the yogurt arena. We thought this was going to create a lot of mess. What this created was they have shared an important part of their volume and value share. The consumer felt a little bit played on that. But yes, we have seen competitive pressure on certain categories, on deep in promotions, again, pre-electoral timing. But what we have seen more lately as well is, remember that Lala is very well positioned to make face or to confront a pressure in devaluation, especially in dollars, because of two things. Only 18% of our costs are denominated in dollars, and we know that one of our competitors is that they do have much higher pressure on that front. And then we only utilize 8% of our milk as powder milk, which is the only tradable milk. So if prices hike on that front, we are naturally hedged, we're naturally covered, because we do have 92% of milk coming from local sources. So this is changing the play field for everyone, and we believe we are much better off in terms of where we are in exposure and locally sourced to be able to defend our margins as much as possible.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you.
And Alvaro, this is Mauricio. Very quickly on this one, I must say two things. More than within subcategories themselves, I think that we've seen a bit more pressure in by geographies. So in the southern east part of the country, where it has the some of the lowest income per capita, there we've seen some pressure. So specifically in milk formula like Nutrileche. But as consumers' confidence comes back after elections, we've also seen the shift from Nutrileche to Lala products. And that's why we have a full and comprehensive strategy for the southeast of the country in order to compete in the at the same level that we do at the center and north of the country.
That's very helpful, Mauricio. Thank you very much. Best of luck.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Luis Miranda with Santander Bank. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, hi, Mauricio, Alberto, thanks for taking my question. It's regarding Brazil, and I just want to understand a little bit the dynamic that you're seeing in terms of the milk prices. You mentioned this 25%, but would like to understand if you are starting to see some relief in the short term, and if you think that the price increases you implemented in August and October could be enough, or you will need additional pricing initiatives in the fourth quarter for to offset these prices of milk, and if you're seeing any, I would say, medium-term pressure here that jeopardize your margin expansion in the business in 2019. And the last question in Brazil is, I was surprised with the increase in market share in Greek yogurt, which seems very, very aggressive for a consumer brand, almost 700 basis points. If you could elaborate a little bit there. Thank you.
Thank you, Luis. So the first question regarding the Brazilian milk prices, what we've seen after the trucker strike is that actually, yes, it has increased, and we don't see, according to our procurement team there, we don't see this alleviating in the short term, meaning before year end. However, the pricing increase that we took that started last month and continued this month is actually going to compensate so that it takes us back to budget, and therefore should not be affecting our plan or margin expansion plan going forward. This meaning 2019 and what we've planned for 2019 will be within the parameters and the extra price increase that we had to take as of this month. But if milk continues at this same rate or comes down, is something that we'll have to watch closely as it was not something expected or that we've seen that follows the same curve of commodities of the past, because it was more related to the trucker strike. So, yes, the pricing will be able to bring us back to budget, and that's what we've been doing this last couple of months. And the second one, which is regarding the Greek yogurt, as you know, the positioning that Vigor has regarding quality and innovation has been a key component, and we're very proud to say that innovation in Brazil, in Vigor, amounts to almost 25% of total sales. That's why I'm so eager to bring part of that innovation to Mexico and what I call the synergies, the intellectual synergies. We even have now someone from Vigor, so a Brazilian colleague of ours is already living here in Mexico, and he's the director of innovation, reporting directly to me and working very hard to bring some of these innovations to the other parts of Grupo Lala. And specifically on Greek yogurt, how we got to 660 basis points has been the big success of Pedazos. Pedazos, which means trances or chunks of yogurt, was the big innovation that has been able to drive this growth in the Greek yogurt category.
Thank you, that was very clear. And just if I may follow up, Alberto, you mentioned on the penalty from the SAT, you mentioned that this chapter is over. I just want to understand that maybe that included other years that were revised by the SAT, and basically there was no mismatch and everything is, so the litigation process is over?
Yes, please. This is exactly the case. This is an audit that was open for over 3 years and a half, and, you know, a lot of documentation and going back and forth with the SAT happened over the last couple of quarters. basically the settlement is Lala was in that time, 2011 and 2012, we had some of our brands in a company in Switzerland. And back then, a transfer price margin was charged in the neighborhood of 3% of sales. And basically, after discussion with that, we convened that the margin should have been more in the order of 2.23% of sales. And the difference between the 2.3 and the 3% is exactly what drove the 139 million pesos penalty. So your question is completely closed now. This is something in the past. It affected both years, 11 and 12. And we don't have at this point in time any other audit that we should be either provisioned for or informing you about that you know could put further pressure into that equation. And just to clarify, these brands which were in Switzerland were repatriated in 2014. So all of them are already in Mexico, and you know we should not have any difficulties with that going further.
Thank you.
Al contrario, Luis.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Felipe Ucros with Scotiabank. Please proceed with your question.
Yes. Good morning, Mauricio and team, and best of luck in this new effort. Thanks for the space for questions as well. Let me ask with a question around strategy and just to keep it in the theme, capital allocation as well. What's your impression of the company's acquisitions thus far? And beyond talking about the asset, which I think most people agree the assets in Brazil are pretty good, maybe if you could talk a little about the price paid and how you think about value when comparing what was done in Brazil with the plans that you have for Lala going forward. And maybe you can talk to us about what you consider are fair prices or fair multiples for dairy assets in Latin America. I would start there. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Felipe. So the first thing is that, as I said before, I'm focusing first on reversing the drag and making sure that all of our regions are breaking even and making money as of 2019. Within that, I think our biggest opportunity right now is to take advantage of the assets and making sure that we are extrapolating some of those synergies throughout the different parts of Grupo Lala. Because as one of the things that I've seen before is more than the asset itself, as you rightly say, is how we're taking advantage of those synergies so that we can extract more value out of the full portfolio of businesses and regions where we operate. So in the sense of Brazil, as you rightly say, yes, it was a high multiple, and what we've been seeing is that it does come with some advantages that we need to utilize and exploit throughout the different parts of Grupo Lala. The first one is talent, and for me, this is a key intellectual synergies. More than in other parts of the world or regions that we've acquired, we have great talent in Vigor in Brazil, and we've started already to export this to other parts of Lala, including here in Mexico, and that should be a great asset. The second one that I keep talking about is innovation. While Brazil is sitting at 25% of innovation, Mexico is between 2 to 4% and recently closer to 2%. So shortening the pipeline of key innovation coming into Mexico and other parts of Lala will be taking advantage of what we've learned and what we have in Brazil. And thirdly, we also have some key processes that have been implemented there that we're exporting now, including some of the quality issues and ways that we measure and track quality, the way that we take some of corporate affairs initiatives and domains for sustainability and contracts and ways of managing the back office. We'll take all these best practices from Brazil. So all these, what I call intellectual synergies, go beyond the what we had identified initially as financial and operating synergies, which should give a better value for the investment done. In the case of Central America, I think a key element will be to reach scale and be able to implement what we want of taking some key products throughout the region.
So the production of ice cream, the production of some key elements like yogurt, moving from one country to the other will be or allow us to take better advantage and returns of those assets, and maximizing now with the production and the new plants that are being opened in this quarter and next quarter. So even then, we're disclosing that we're opening the plant in Guatemala in Q4 and Costa Rica in Q1. But actually, those plants are already running. So this disclosure is the plant, what I call after ramp up, already full and loaded and created value and creating value in the market. So I went 2 weeks ago. I was in Guatemala. I already tried myself the ice cream being produced there, the high quality, the premiumization that's being done there. And we see opportunities of exporting that ice cream and not just selling those in Guatemala. So those are the kind of advantages that will start coming through out of these assets. So capital allocation is critical. As I say, it's strategic. The ROE, the ROIC for shareholders is key. And we'll have a better idea of going forward as part of our 2025 vision. And as much as other countries in LATAM, before expanding there, I would say focus is key. So Mexico is of the essence. The name of the game is increasing margins in Mexico. And Brazil, I do see a great brand, a powerful portfolio with great geographical locations. So some people asked, some of you asked if this vision and dream of being the preferred company of dairy in LATAM or the Americas, and I think it comes firstly with scale. If you are and have the preferred brand in Mexico and Brazil, you play a big chance of actually having a preferred brand throughout LATAM just because of scale. And that's where I want to focus. More than filling in the map with colors and countries where we operate, I believe in focusing on these two countries that will make a key difference for our scale and our ROIC going forward.
Okay, thanks, Mauricio. That's very clear. And maybe if I can have a follow-up, can you comment on how to manage the differences between the timelines of different investors, the time horizons when they think about investing in new ventures? And it seems there is a disconnect very often in Latin America when you have a controlling family who's probably thinking 50, 100 years down the line with the asset. And then on the other hand, you have some minority investors, funds which typically think 3, maybe 5 years down the line, a few that you could count in one hand think 10 years down the line. How do you bridge the gap between those time horizons for investments and the difficulties that arise when you look at assets?
Yeah, thank you, Felipe. So I think that one of the first questions that we received from Antonio, actually, from Credit Suisse, who asked, and in that sense, it's compensation packages. So long-term incentives and short-term incentives, we're speaking about 1 year and 4 year horizons that even go up to 8. However, management and our focus is on delivering results in the short term and the medium term that go as well for the benefit of different shareholders. However, my vision as a CEO and as a manager of this business is to generate value for shareholders in the midterm. And we shouldn't be expecting a return of capital in 1 year or 18 months. We definitely need to talk more about 3 to 5, 8 year horizon, but we are still focused and obsessed with the short-term results as it is part of management compensation, short-term incentive, as well as having then longer-term incentive in the 4 year horizon. And I guess that's where we're both bigger shareholders, or as you say, older family owned companies that then go public privately owned companies. Come to a midterm, and that's, I believe, what we as management need to focus.
Okay, that's great to hear. Thanks a lot, Maurice.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Miguel Portolero with GBM. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning, Maurice and Alberto. Thanks for the question. I understand what you have seen during the year in terms of the competitive environment and the pricing strategies in Mexico, but I would like to better understand how different should we expect this pricing strategy going forward? Should we expect a material change with the price increase you took in September to release cost inflation and maybe protect margins? And secondly, I guess also related to capital allocation, what are your thoughts on your repurchase strategy? Should we expect a more aggressive repurchase program given the current levels of the stock? Thank you.
Yes. Hi, Miguel. Listen, on the competitive environment and the pricing pressure. As I've shared before, we do see that through a lens of the three P's. First of all, we need to continue driving productivity further because we believe that inflation is going to be here to stay, and this is where a program such as zero-based budget is going to be, you know, driving important efficiencies to be able to reinvest back in the business. So the first P is productivity. The second P is portfolio. Remember that we have, over the last 24 months, pushed a lot our premiumization strategy with Lala 100, with the lease and so on. We are, you know, Lala 100 today, it's priced at 23, 24 peso per liter versus our milk formula at 14.90. So the second leverage to keep driving value in the category is the portfolio. We are working a lot on portfolio. This is the same thing as well on our cheese strategy. This is the same thing for cream, same thing for desserts, and the same thing for yogurts. So on that front, that's kind of our second P. The third P is pricing, and we recognize that we kind of, I would say, took some pressure out of the equation at the beginning of this year. Now, to talk about facts, because this is what I believe it also needs to be well grounded. Historically, Lala has been able to price up its portfolio at least now with inflation. This is something that we did in 2016 when the devaluation of the Mexican peso came. In 2017, we increased close to 10% of the price vis-a-vis an inflation, at least our inflation that was in that order. So I have no doubt that we have the brand strength and the portfolio to be able to recover that, you know, in a couple of quarters. The fact of being ease on the first part of the year did not help, obviously, the rest of the result of the year, and also put us in a difficult situation as we end up the year. But the pricing taken recently in September and October are going to be taking at least three quarters of that inflation away of our of pressure, and we are expecting the margins to start expanding in Q4. So that's the way I'm looking at prices. So for me, it's just a question of time. It's certainly not a question of strategy or structure that needs to drive those prices back to where they were. And then on your second question,
before you jump to capital allocation, Beto, let me, Miguel, just to give a bit more color regarding revenue management. I'm a big believer in having a proper, more scientific structure of revenue management within the business. So starting with having the right pricing architecture by channel, pack, occasion, and therefore being able to differentiate and take advantage via precision pricing so that we're able to protect our margins. And of course, in this case, well, what we call the internal inflation related to cost of raw materials, packaging, and utilities. But I believe that a much more accurate and holistic revenue management team being able to identify with intelligence what is being out there, being done by the competitor, how it shifts, how it changes through trade marketing, and how it's implemented in a much faster way via the handhelds, now smartphones of the sales force, and having a bit more empowerment within the sales team and pre-sellers will allow us to also take pricing, not this one-size-fits-all and one or two price increases per year,
but being much more dynamic depending on the subcategory, on the channel, on the geography, and the type of product that we're selling. And this is something that we're definitely bringing into the business.
And then on your second question, Miguel, on capital allocation and repurchase of the stock, over the last 10 months, we have been very actively repurchasing stocks from the market. Over the last 3 quarters, we have acquired around 1 million stocks to 1.5 million stocks, so from 20 million pesos to 30 million pesos. We are obviously managing also our current liquidity to make sure that we can make front to our commitments in terms of debt, but we have been very actively going to the market and acquire shares. We increased from 300 million pesos to close to 800 million pesos. Our share stock buyback program in 1 year.
Okay, that's really clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you'd like to join the question queue, please press star one at this time. Our next question comes from the line of Guillermo Diego with Santander Bank. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, can you please just give us an outlook of the working capital requirements for the last quarter? We have seen some volatility before and after the acquisition, so should we expect the same run rate of working capital, or should we expect more close to before the acquisitions? That's the first one.
Yeah, Guillermo. Guillermo, are you talking specifically about any given country?
Yes, Lala consolidated, no? Just your working capital requirements for the fourth quarter, that would be useful. Or your days, any data that you have there.
Okay, yeah, sure. So on with the consolidation of Brazil, where you have a much more, I would say, dependency on modern trade, and your payment terms are not, you know, as cash here in Mexico and in the mom and pop stores, you have a natural push on DSO. But if you look at the numbers in Mexico, we are improving in Mexico. We are improving in the U.S. We're not improving in Central America. When it comes to inventory levels as well in Mexico, it's when you see DIO, we are reducing from 1 to 1.5 versus last year. When you think about DPO in Mexico as well, we are increasing half of a point versus last year. So there's an important element there of getting to optimize our working capital. But again, the consolidation of Brazil, if you look at our balance sheet, puts further pressure on clients, basically, given the footprint of customers in Brazil.
Okay. So you're going to keep the same rate that we saw in the third quarter with certain pressure in the inventory and maybe accounts payable part, right?
Yes, but for the fourth quarter, we will have an important improvement in Mexico.
All right.
Yeah.
The second one is on CapEx. I think you have invested over maybe, I have here, 1.9 billion. Yes, and you expect the year to end in 3 billion, right?
Yes, Guillermo. And this is explained by the fact that, as Mauricio was saying, we are just in the process of decommissioning and finalizing the plants in Central America. Both plants, at the end of the day, are going to be investments in the neighborhood of $20 million each plant. And there is an important element of basically CapEx cash that it's paying for the final works on those sites. So yes, we reconfirm that our 3 billion peso vision by the end of the year is going to be happening.
Okay, with that metric, I think your cash flow is going to be under a little bit of pressure. So what is the level of cash in the company that you feel comfortable with, no, in order to know maybe when are you going to go to the debt market? And if you go, what's going to be the expected funding cost that you're going to be getting there?
Yeah, listen, I cannot disclose exactly our plans to close the year, but I can tell you that we are changing a historic dynamic that we have with our suppliers of milk, especially related to the way we were managing the year end. Historically, we were advancing some of their shipments for the following year, which was, you know, it has been managed like that for more than 20 years, and we're stopping that as of this year. This is something that we've discussed with them early in the year, and this is exactly how we're going to be financing the cash needed to close the year as we're expecting.
Okay, and just what is the level of cash that you feel comfortable with? That is something very general, not?
Listen, it really depends on the quarter. It really depends on the day of the month, as the way we pay our meal suppliers, it's very, let's say, atypical. I would rather not disclose an amount. What I can tell you is just to provide you certainty that by the end of the year, given what we have decided in terms of working capital improvements, and notably the way we are stopping the advance payment to our
meal suppliers,
it's, you know, it's in the order of $50 million. So it's not minor. It's going to help us to bridge our cash needs.
Okay. And finally, you were talking about the ROIC. Maybe what's your target there? You mentioned that during a lot of questions. So what ROIC do you expect to achieve, and when, or if you cannot give a number, maybe when do you expect to be break even at least?
Yes. Guillermo, first of all, I mean, we were certainly not happy with the current ROIC at, you know, at in the neighborhood of 6%. We need to be certainly above our weighted average cost of capital, which is around 10.5. This is currently our obsession. The best way to get there and the shortest way to get there is to make sure that we're getting the cash from the acquisitions we have made. So, you know, when you ask us about a target, at this point in time, I would just limit ourselves to say that we are obsessed on getting ahead of our weighted average cost of capital as soon as we can.
Okay, and finally, just on the taxes, I think you have paid over 900 million taxes year to date. I see on the cash tax side over 1.7 billion. So what's going to be the cash tax for the next year? No?
Yeah, it's the next year is going to be a normalized tax rate, which is in the neighborhood of 1.3, 1.4 billion. There is a potential good news as well in terms of tax cash that I would probably mention in Q4 if it's realized. But you know, I have nothing to communicate at this point on that front.
Okay, and what's the probability of that good news happening?
You know, let's say it's a 50-50 shot.
Okay, great. Thanks for the answers.
Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez. There are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the floor back to you for final comments.
Thank you, everybody, for your time and questions and interest in Grupo Lala. We hope you will join us again next quarter. Until then, we will be sure to provide you with important updates as developments unfold. Thank you again, and goodbye.
Thank you. This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation.